Hi, Mark.
Hi, Kayla.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
We haven't been talking already for the better part of 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah. Well, it wasn't recorded, thank goodness.
We had a great conversation.
We did. But that will never get aired. So. Too many incriminating statements.
By both of us.
Exactly.
Nailed it. when did we meet?
Oh, my gosh. I'd say maybe 20, more than 20 years. Definitely more than 20 years.
I hope not. I'm only 30.
When did you start going to convention? When did you first start?
I would have gone, my first SAM convention would have been 2015.
No, it was.
But it was before.
It was before then. Wait, wasn't it in Connecticut?
Uh-oh, what are we going to talk about?
No, I'm not going to mention what it was, but I thought you were...
I was like, what act
I thought, that you, that's I thought you were... Yeah, it was the act we don't want to talk about. It was semi-embarrassing. No, it wasn't embarrassing at all. You were very memorable, quite honestly. Oh, but it was probably early 2000s. It had to be. You were with Mr. Andrews, and you were performing on one of the shows. And I think you may have actually come out as working with an MC...
Right.
And you were just like helping out the MC on one of the shows because you were very well dressed and statuesque. I remember saying, that's a very statuesque young lady. She knows how to move on stage.
That's good. Let's talk about me for the whole episode.
Exactly. My memories of Kayla, you know, it's no.
This is lovely.
No, and, you know, your parents, you know, were just always so lovely. We'd always see you guys together at conventions and stuff. And
it must have been like MAS or.
I went always before MAS, I think so.
Oh, so I performed at NemCon. But I didn't. I was not doing the saxophone act.
No. You said it. I didn't.
That's true. I have incriminated myself.
Okay.
Oy. It would have been because I would have been doing like birds and stuff.
You were.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So it would have been NemCon.
Yeah.
So that would have been like 2003.
That sounds about right because the only time I've been at NemCon, I worked NemCon once, and that sounds about right.
I also have a fun memory of after NemCon. So like I was in seventh grade. I didn't quite know who a lot of the booked performers were in terms of their reputation and work within magic. And now looking back at it, so somebody found the program from when I did NemCon. And they're like, oh, look, this is really fun because there's you. And I looked and I was like, did I perform in the same show as Paul Gertner? Did I not understand that? That's sort of just like the jump you make from being that age to now.
Yeah, but back in those days, pre-internet days, you know, seventh graders didn't know about all these people.
Yeah.
So, and you had your, you know, microcosm that was the Bill Andrews universe.
Yeah. Which featured a lot of amazing people.
Incredible people.
But you're right, leaving that bubble.
Okay, so I'll say something incriminating about somebody else.
Okay,
I remember there was an SAM in Stamford, and I'm guessing it was 90s, maybe late 90s.
Okay.
And Ryan Oakes won the competition. Little Ryan Oakes. And I have a photo of Ryan and I, and I'm on one knee and we're like the same height. It's really funny.
And I get that to be the cover photo of this episode.
No, absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not.
Incriminating Ryan is fun because he's always just so great.
He is.
That
he's
you're like,
amazing.
Let's get a funny photo of that man.
Amazing.
Amazing. So I'm going to ask you some general questions.
Okay.
Just because people don't know who you are.
Okay.
How long have you been in magic?
60 years.
Great. What would be we often ask about like self-titling. So I would self-title as a magician. Other people would self-title as like a spouse or an assistant or a partner. Do you have I would self-title as like a close-up magician and a parlor magician. And what would you self-title yourself?
The answer is yes. I've always worn a lot of hats. Mm. When I started in magic as far as competitions, and I started competing like in 1968, way too early, stupidly. Thank you. But no, as a stage manipulator, I did a music-based act. And that's what magicians knew me as. And it wasn't until like late 70s where I actually started doing close-up competitions and magicians heard me talking for the first time. And they're like, why were you doing the music act where you weren't talking? You know, it's like, you should really be cashing out. So for years and years and years, I was doing stage manip and close up for magicians conventions. But the reality is, the majority of my work was doing a regular stand-up act, you know, after dinner type things, organizational, corporate, private, functional kind of stuff. So I really do a lot of everything. And in the last, I don't know, 15 years or so, I've been doing less performing and more consulting and coaching, creating for other people besides myself. And I continue to create for myself. So I'm like performer, lecturer, author, creator, and I enjoy it all. So I really don't really see myself in any one particular role there.
Would you ever call yourself a magic historian?
I guess.
I mean, I'm alluding to your basement.
Yeah, my
that
basement.
That sounds creepy.
The lower, and it's been memorialized on DVD. My LNL DVDs is a bonus. There's the tour, and I've had at least six magicians tell me that's the video that saved their marriage, because they would say to their wives, "Honey, look at this. You complain about my stuff. Look at all the crap this guy's got."
You had to build a whole subset of your house, basically, to.
Right, and I really have outgrown all that, and we're starting to talk about where that stuff's going. But it's a multi-purpose space. It is the whole lower level, and you know, it is highly customized. I designed the house, and I had the lower level really, you know, done very, very specifically. So it is my library. It is collections of props, and there's a 33-seat theater with rake seating and real theater seats, and I host magic lectures and workshops and stuff there every month, once or twice a month. And I use that as a rehearsal space for me, but also a teaching space.
And just sort of also a nod to like things that you've done. Have you heard of a move called Shapeshifter?
Oh, somebody told me about that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the, yeah. So yeah. There's, yeah, it's a card move. It's a card change.
It's a card move that no one does ever on Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have friends who just send me these links and said, you know, you ought to tell this guy to take this down. He's teaching your move. And I started becoming aware of it. And then I started finding people who were very known and popular teaching it. And I contacted them to take it down. I heard like nothing back. So now there's certain people that I will no longer deal with, no longer talk to, and I'm not happy with them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You and there are people, even my kids know who this guy is. And so now they know that his name is Anathema.
I love that. Amazing.
Yeah.
If no one understood the fun that we just had, Shapeshifter is your move.
Yeah, it's a card change that David Blaine did on his first two specials. And literally everywhere I go in the world, somebody's doing it. So I'm very happy about that. And it's and I've told the history of this countless times that, you know, it was based on something Oscar Munoz came up with. I modified the handling and it just kind of took off. You know, Steve Beam published it. And then it started showing up in other people's projects without my name attached or Oscar's name attached. And so we made certain that got corrected, and the Illusionist ended up we released a DVD and then also as a download. So,
oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So it's officially officially, and it's in my book, and, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really great. The process come about because it got published and then it ended up in Blaine Special. Was that sort of the chronological order?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So did you get a call being like, hi, Blaine wants to do this move?
Nope.
Or because
nope.
It was published.
Just showed up. Yeah. Oh, and to me, I'm fine with that. Once you publish it, once you put it out there, yeah, it's free game. Yeah, as long as you bought my book or the download or the DVD or whatever.
As you're watching that special, are you just like, when
I saw it, I went, wow.
Yay.
You know, so now I can advertise. I seen on the David Blaine, but. And whenever I see David, he's very nice.
Awesome. So we kind of mentioned MAEF, the Magicians Alliance of Eastern States.
Yes.
Convention, which I've definitely been going to for longer than you've been booking it. Is that right?
Nope.
When did you start booking it?
I started booking talent for MAS. It's at least 25 years now.
You've been doing it for 25
years.
Yeah,
I've been booking the talent. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, in fact, at the last MAS, we had the conversation and somebody said, you realize, of course, that we are now older than the old guys that used to run the convention. So it's like, yeah, we are. So, yeah, so now we're old and we're trying to, you know, bring up that next generation now, just like the old guys brought us up. But yeah. Joe and John and Beth and I and Arlen, you know, we've been running that for, it's got to be at least 25 years
That's
now.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Oh, I left out Mike Miller. Sorry.
Fine.
Mike Miller.
We all
Mike
leave
Miller.
Out Mike Miller.
Mike Miller.
Because we try
Mike
anyway,
Miller.
But he just keeps showing up.
I know. Yeah,
I'm
we can't prevent
he didn't
it.
Walk into this room. Oh, my.
Well, he's playing the show tonight, so, you
oh,
know.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
So, you've been booking MAS forever.
Forever.
Also, am I saying MAS?
MAES.
Yes, but the A and the E blend together.
No, they don't. No, they never do. Like people say mace. They say
that's
mace. It's
wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's like saying mum.
Mum. I was just
right, yeah.
Sam.
So it's Magicians Alliance of Eastern States. That's
in
the official.
New Jersey.
Well, originally, it was supposed to move from city to city every year, and it was organized and sponsored by individual clubs in those cities. We know what's happened to all those clubs now. And it's at least 15 years, 12 to 15 years, that the MAS decided to take it out of the hands of local organizations and that the organization itself would sponsor all the conventions. So for many, many years, we were in Harrisburg, actually Carlisle, Pennsylvania, just west of Harrisburg. And then we decided to move it down to Philly to see if we could get a little better attendance because we're in a little more metropolitan area. So we shifted around. We were in Trevis. We were in King of Prussia. And we found this hotel in Cherry Hill. And they were really wonderful to work with. They bent over backwards to give us what we needed and to make this thing work. And so I think now we're coming up. I think this year will probably be the seventh or eighth year we've been there. It's a good location, central location.
Yeah.
We're drawing from New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Delaware, Maryland, fringes of Virginia, Western Pennsylvania, and occasionally you get some outliers coming in. But it's one of those conventions where it's like a family convention. It's like kind of like Abbott's, but
yeah.
With more Jews. You don't have to sleep in people's porches.
That is nice.
Yeah,
I do enjoy that.
Yeah. But it's a very family-oriented thing. And it's like the same people every year. And it's like family. And we get together. And every night, there's a hospitality suite that's open to everyone. And everybody just sits around partying. And the people that I tend to book are the kinds of people that tend to like to hang out with those people and just talk, session, whatever. It's just a real nice, friendly kind of thing.
Yeah, every time I've gone, it just feels like everybody's really supportive. And I mean, I remember competing there as a kid and
yep.
Like also as an adult. And
yep.
It was just a complete support system. Do you feel like that's been intentionally cultivated?
Incredibly intentionally.
How does one do that? If you're like, I'm going to create a convention where it's a smaller convention, how many people usually attend?
At this point, we're getting anywhere from 120, 140,
That's
150
amazing.
People.
How do you go about going, how do we figure out how to make a family as opposed to just
you don't.
Make money?
You don't.
Okay.
You don't. You don't. It's just you try to create, you know, scheduling and programming and performers that attract a variety of people. And you try to make sure that there's space there for people to session. You know, like the hospitality suite. Okay, yeah, there's people up there drinking, but we got kids up there too, and nobody's getting hammered. It's just like, it's social.
Yeah.
And there's a table there for guys to sit at and show each other stuff. And it's just, you can be at the Magic Geek table, or you can be over here just socializing and talking. And, you know, and that's what we're trying to foster. As far as the fostering the support for youth, we have definitively made an outreach there. And fortunately, with Arlen Solomon and Eric Lampert, who are the movers and shakers of SYM in Philly, we try to get young people to come to this thing and make it attractive for them to be there and know that there's going to be like-minded people. And, you know, for a while, we were trying to, you know, kind of make it an extension of Tenet's Magic Camp. And and the thing with it is that the older members really take it upon themselves to try to reach out and be loving and kind about it in critiquing these young performers who compete. So we do have competition, stage competition, and close competition. And I will tell you, in the last several years, some of the best performances have been very young performers. Mm-hmm. And there are people that are working with them and taking them by the hand and making certain that, hey, here's an idea. Here's something you want to think about. Hey, did you try this? And I remember there was one young man that did Dancing Queen in the competition. And after the competition in the hallway, Denny Haney came out and David Oliver was there that year. And the two of them were giving this kid a crash course in everything you'd ever want to know about Dancing Queen by two guys who really, you know their stuff on the subject.
Yeah.
And that happens frequently. That happens frequently, stuff just like that.
Yeah, I definitely had that happen to me. So it's a great convention. I love it. Oh, speaking on the subject, so as someone who has attended MAES and also just like been in magic forever, do you remember just every act you ever see, or like every winner of every competition, or every act of it? Like, you're a little bit of a brain encyclopedia of things.
Yeah, in fact, Mr. McBride and I spent a couple hours together today, and you know, we're of the same reasonable time period and have the same love of that genre of acts, and we were just like doing comparison of this act, that act. And yeah, I pretty much remember most of the acts I see. I probably remember 80% of the names. I may not remember exactly what year I saw them or where I saw them, but yeah, I try to keep a pretty good memory bank of that because that's part of my research library. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got books, I've got videos, but then I also have memory.
Yeah, you have a good memory. If I were to, in theory, ask you, like, who won this competition in this year? Like,
no, I'm not going to be able to tell you that anymore. No. But I can tell you.
There was a point where.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I remember third place of this convention.
Yeah. But now I'm not attending as many conventions as I used to.
Yeah.
You know, between family and business, it's just a little tough to do that all now.
But
so,
like a backlog.
Backlog. Oh, yeah. I do have backlog, that kind of stuff.
It's a mental backlog of all of that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. I know. It's always really impressed us. They're like, you just are sort of this, we all know you have a little bit of an encyclopedia.
I'll tell you a funny story. There, for a while, I was living in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is where most of my business is. I don't do magic full time. I'm a real estate developer. And we used to drive to Steve Dushek's once a month on a Friday night and have a get together at Steve's with the magicians from up in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre. So there were like three or four guys from Harrisburg that would go. So the ride up, my friend Walt nicknamed me Univac. That used to be an early computer for you young people. So it's time to play Stump Univac. And so they would just, you know, work up all these questions to try to stump me with it. So there was a point where, you know, it came down to, okay, you know, what book, what page number? I don't do that anymore. That's just, it's there's too much out there now. This is before there was like self-publishing and before there was video even. So yeah. I can't keep up with that anymore.
That's amazing. All right, so let's double back to MAES.
MAES.
So we had a phone call a little while ago, sort of in the realm of the statistical analysis of women being featured in the magic community and magic resources and things.
Yes.
One of the things is, like, besides MAES, you also kind of mentioned this, but you also book lectures in your creepy basement. It's
exactly.
Not for you guys. It's really amazing. but I'm just going to call it the creepy basement.
You can. I'll own up to it.
I love it. So you also book lectures there.
Yes.
So you've booked a lot of talent.
Yes.
Over a long period of time. So some of the stats that you gave me for MAES were sort of from 2012 to 2019.
Right.
What I find really interesting is sort of what we talked about. So overall, from 2012 to 2019, there's a 7.88% feature of women performing magic.
Right.
And that's not including assistants.
Correct. That's as featured performers. Yeah.
And that's really impressive because we do estimate that 2 to 5% of professional magicians are women. That's like a cultural anthropological study that we reference a lot. So that being at almost 8% is pretty impressive. Obviously, that's a focus. You're going, how do I book diversity?
Yes. It's more of a theoretical, how do I go about booking acts, period?
Mm.
And, you know, what's my mission here?
Yes.
So for the convention, obviously, you want to create well-balanced shows. You also want to have a well-balanced roster of talent that you try to hit as many points as you can of interest that people, the convention attendees, will appreciate and enjoy. Yep. And I want to make certain that I am booking people that are not generally seen at conventions.
Sure.
I want to put new talent out there. I want people to see people that I think should be seen for one reason or another.
Yep.
And part of all that mission is women in magic.
Right.
You know, they're just not enough seen out there. And I always want to make certain that I want to have a reasonable representation. The challenge, of course, is when you have a convention where you've got 2.5 days of programming and you're working with a limited budget because you only have 120 people or 130 people, whatever that is, I need performers that can give me a lot of bang for the buck.
Yeah.
So I need performers who can do stand-up, performers that can do close-up, performers that can do a lecture. You know, it's that triple threat performer. It's the ultimate. No, they're not all that. They're not all that. But as much as I can, I want to be able to utilize people that I can afford to pay to bring them in, make it worth their while, and make it fit within the convention budget.
Yeah.
But I'm always willing to stretch a little bit to make certain that people, you know, see magicians that don't normally get seen. And a lot of that is there's a lot of women that have never been seen at conventions. Yeah. So this year, there's already 2 women I'm talking about bringing in this year. So I'm hoping that works out because I'm just starting to put together the whole, you know, the whole roster right now. We're in January. I'm actually a little late, but we're trying to make that happen.
So when they have an act, they really want to be booked for MAES. But as you're saying, you want somebody who could be a triple threat.
Or somebody that really works cheap. Let's be honest here, you know. No, I...
It's a magic convention. Totally understand.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But like I said, ultimately, I would like all my performers to be triple threats that are people that I have to pay for a convention of our size, what I would term serious money, which is not serious money in anybody's book, but to make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are women that I've brought in just to do a stage act.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk quite frankly about the majority of women that are out there now who have either expressed a desire to perform in conventions or have the chops or the capabilities. There's not a lot of them presenting themselves to me. I have to go searching for these.
Yep.
So when I booked you, you weren't on anybody's radar.
Right.
You know, I only knew you because I knew you.
Yeah.
You know, when I booked Melissa Russo, nobody ever heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason we did is because Mike Miller knows her. I mean, it's like, you know, we're out there looking.
Yeah, you have to actively sort of seek. Right?
Exactly.
Like, well, then that's for probably just even good acts. You're just constantly
absolutely
looking for any sort of good act.
Good acts that haven't been seen.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I there are conventions that are notorious for booking the same act over and over and over. And we're sick of them. And no names will be mentioned.
Sure,
but
yeah,
how many times do you want to see X or Y? And look, some of that was because of the producers of those shows, that the people that were booking the talent had their friends and they wanted to bring their friends. And okay, very, very nice and all. But let's think about all the convention registrants, and you could have had another one or two acts that, that were new faces.
Absolutely. So then looking at, so if you're talking about being a triple threat, part of that is also lecturing, as you mentioned.
Yep.
So booking the lectures at your place in the basement. So this is probably a bit different than when we talked on the phone, because I imagine you have had more lectures in the last few months.
Yes.
So this statistical analysis might be slightly off.
Slightly, but I think it's probably pretty close to it.
So this is what I find really interesting, and this has nothing to do with you, because I think already you're booking, like you're seeking out women to lecture. But comparatively to women who have an act, so then also women who can lecture as an expertise, at the time we spoke, there were 247 lecturers, 4 solo women, and 3 that were a part of a duo. So like Rachel and Aldo, but obviously Rachel's is a magician.
Absolutely.
Ted and Marion Outerbridge.
Outerbridge, yeah.
And then Christian Painter and Catalina Absalon.
Correct.
So all 3 of those women, magicians.
Right.
So statistically speaking, that's a feature of 2.83%.
at the time that we spoke. That's already more than the 2% that we target. We say target 2% of your bookings are women. But I just find that that difference between almost 8% to almost 3%, that's a pretty big jump.
Well, and again, my mission when I started sponsoring lectures at my home was I want to give new lecturers their first or second lecture. I want to give them a place. I won't say like they used to say to be bad. No, I want to give them a place to work it out.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, well, you've lectured there. So, you know, it's not a magic club. Mm-hmm. People are there on purpose to see that lecture, not because it's the monthly meeting. So it's a very different environment to begin with. Mm-hmm. It's a more social environment in that it's my home. There's no politics. They're just there to see the lecture. And it's a very, I like to think of it as a kinder, more forgiving kind of audience. So it is a good place for people to do that first or second lecture. And it is very rare that I have ever turned down anyone who has contacted me and said, I'd like to lecture at your place. My first comment is generally, when? Mm-hmm. You know, let's pick a time. Let's, you know, tell me what you've got. Tell me what you're looking to do. Do you have some notes you can send me or something? But I, you know, generally, if I've turned down, with two exceptions in all these years, the only time I've turned people down is because I simply didn't have it open in my schedule. That's it. Yeah. I mean, and I've had people back, you know, 2-3 times.
Yeah.
And it's not important to me to make this a money-making proposition. I'm hoping at the end of the year I haven't lost too much money when I sponsor these. But I rarely have women contact me and say, I have a lecture that I'd like to bring in and deliver at your place. It just doesn't happen frequently. And it's a shame because you compare that 2% to the 8%, the 8% of performers, by and large, are all really capable performers with something to say and something to show. And I don't understand why more women don't put themselves out there as, I won't say an expert, but certainly someone who can teach, someone who believes they have something to offer to other magicians. Now, that being said, the lecture business has changed remarkably for a number of reasons. You know, there's other avenues. Penguin. Penguin and Murphy's.
Uh-huh.
And I've said this to a bunch of people. And I've said it to people at Penguin that you really screwed up the lecture market because why should somebody come out to a live lecture when they could just stay home and watch it whenever they want?
Yep.
And they have acknowledged, you know, that the live lecture experience is not the same as seeing it on the internet.
Yeah.
There is something to be said, number one, to going there to be able to ask questions of those performers, to get hands-on contact with them and have them show you what you should be doing or not be doing when you're attempting these things. And there's things that are talked about and tipped in a live environment that will not happen in a recorded environment. I can tell you so many times that, you know, from the back of the house, somebody will say, what about XYZ? And the guy, oh, you want to say that? Okay. Boom. And they go into it. And there's things that they're talking about that just will get shown that would not normally be shown.
Yeah.
So the live lecture experience is great. But, and I sidetrack here, the point of it is that there are not as many groups booking lectures as there used to be.
Yeah.
And I used to be able to be pretty sure that if somebody was going to come in, and I did not book lectures on tours. I have friends who would contact me and they say, okay, I want to lecture your place. Where else can I get booked?
Yep.
And, you know, inevitably, Denny's.
Yeah.
Denny's was either the day before or the day after mine. So you had two back to back.
And close enough, that's driving distance.
It's 90 minutes.
Far away.
90 minutes.
It's not going to be the same people.
Yeah, it's a 90-minute drive.
Yep, that's awesome. How do you make a lecture?
How do you make a lecture?
Yeah.
You stand up and you perform tricks and then you teach them.
So let's say you haven't invented tricks.
Yes.
Let's say you're performing. You've been performing for a while now. Like after 2 years of performing, maybe not time for a lecture. But let's say you're doing something really unique and interesting and you decide, I would like to lecture on this topic. or on these tricks or whatever.
Okay.
How do you even start by going, that's a thing I should do?
Well, I would say, you know, look, lectures are not always about tricks, and they're not always about tricks you've invented. The better ones are a combination of tricks you've invented, tricks you have varied, presentations for effects that might be a little different than what's out there, experiences you've had in performance, and theoretical work. By that I mean just how you approach magic and talking about your process of either creating material, adapting material, adopting material. There's a whole host of different things you can do. And there have been plenty of people out there that I've seen who have performed good material who are very capable, would be very capable of doing a lecture. Now, not every lecturer is a good lecturer, but, you know, if you're willing to kind of put yourself out there and talk about stuff that you do and stuff that you've come up with in a reasonably cogent manner, give it a try. And when I say give it a try, your local club. Go to the, you know, your president or whoever's organizing programming and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing a lecture. Can I do a lecture here for the club? Hey, these groups really, they're starving for programming. So heck yeah. I think you'll be able to get a lecture from your local group, and then you might get one from the next city over or something. It's a great way to start and determine if it's something that you want to do, that you think is worthwhile doing, and to find out if it's worthwhile for the people who would potentially attend.
Great. What are the sort of genres of topics to get the most positive feedback? What are things, especially now, that the audiences are craving to learn about?
Well, I remember many, many years ago, a buddy of mine and I attended a Tannen's Jubilee, I'm guessing 45 years ago, and the late Peter Pitt lectured. And the lecture was called Method or Magic, and the lecture had two tricks, and I don't think he even performed one of them. I think in the lecture notes, there are two tricks. I think he only performed one of them. The rest was all theory. And my buddy and I were just eating this up. This is great stuff. I mean, Peter Pitt was top pro, and he was giving us gold. I mean, it was great stuff. And I watched the people around. They're fidgeting, and people are getting up and walking out. And, you know, so we were talking to Peter afterwards. I said, I don't know, Peter, were we the only two people that really appreciated that lecture? You know, now it's different. Now people like theory lectures. And I'll tell you, I can't speak for everybody, but the groups that come to my place, they love theory. And when the guys come in and they start doing theory stuff, it's beyond a lecture. Now it's a conversation. Mm. So they're putting it out there and we're talking about it. And boy, does that make for a great evening.
Is there a specific subsection of theory? Like, is it performing theory? Is it business theory? Is there across the board, like, people want to learn from experience?
I don't consider business stuff theory. I don't consider stagecraft, per se, is theory. When I say theory, I'm talking about theory of creation, theory of performance, not the hard brass tacks of stagecraft, but the theory of what goes into performance, ways to perform, ways to make your performance stronger, character development, persona, personality. I mean, those kinds of things, as well as the theoretical thinking about what makes good magic good, psychological issues, things like that. I mean, these are all great things to talk about. Why you move that coin 3 inches to the left instead of 3 inches to the right. And, you know, there's just so much stuff there, and it gets pretty dense. And it's not for everybody, but, you know, the people that come to my place, they love a healthy dose of theory.
That's great.
Now, as far as, like, the business stuff and all, that's great, too.
Yeah.
And I've had people come out and talk about that stuff. And, boy, you know, some of those lectures, they'll put one or two things out there. And, boy, that's worth the price of the lecture.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool. That's good to hear, too, that it's not just like trick, 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 trick.
Oh, heavens no.
I don't care for them at all.
I'll toot your horn and Lynetta's horn when you guys came out and did the double lecture at my place. Originally, it was Lynetta coming out, and you were just kind of coming along.
Yeah.
And I said, Kayla, I think you should do your lecture, too. So we made it, you know, like a double header. It was a half and half lecture, which really worked out really well. And I think you did that a few other places.
We did it at Denny's as well.
Yeah.
Denny's. What I found really interesting is that, because everyone knows Lynetta well, she's a beast, right? And so it happened at Denny's where someone came up and is like, I knew Lynetta's lecture was going to be great, but what I learned a thing that, like, I didn't think you would be interesting at all. I thought you were just going to do trick, 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 trick as a young magician, and instead you talked about bar theory. What was fun about going with Lynetta is that we had two different perspectives.
Very.
Two totally different lectures.
Very different subject matter.
Exactly. Yeah. But that somehow just meshed together.
It meshed together, and it was like a something for everybody kind of thing. But Lynetta's lecture was such an unusual lecture.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody says, okay, well, she's going to come out and do this lecture on fabric and magic, it's like...
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so after that first 10 minutes, what's going to happen? You know, it's like, and it was just exciting and informative, and it was great. It was a great lecture.
I cannot speak more highly of her lecture, and I mean all of Lynetta's work, but specifically the history of fabric use in magic.
Exactly.
Is so interesting because it sounds like you said, it's just going to be a bunch of stories. And really what it is it's hands-on. You learn how to blow an egg. Did she do that in here?
Yep, absolutely.
The whole
egg
blowing thing, but the way she does it is a little bit unique. So everybody gets to get up and participate. And, like, she really did a great job doing that. And that was her first actual lecture tour.
Yeah.
So that experience, I mean, now she's doing it in Blackpool.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, so it's awesome. Really.
Very nice.
Yeah, good for her. She's amazing. So then in that regard, so if someone has a lecture... And they, like, type up a little thing and say, this is what my lecture's on. And they try it at their local club.
Right.
In theory, they could also contact you and go, I'm going to be on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Don't
come out just do a lecture at my house. It's not financially responsible. But, yeah, contact me. I'm easily found. I'm on Facebook. But if you want my actual contact, my personal email is fcaps, F-K-A-P-S, like Fred Caps, fcaps at AOL.com.
That's like seven other episodes.
I just talked to Joel Zaritsky, and so we're going to do an SAM virtual assembly. We're going to do a tour of the basement. So that'll be fun. That'll be funny.
So then that kind of then swings into the other topic I wanted to talk to you about, which is mentorship.
Yes.
So obviously you're providing this opportunity for people to sort of try out a newish thing.
Right. And I'm not reticent about telling you what was right and what was wrong about that lecture.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, here's a couple ideas you might think about. You might think about moving this from year to year. Mm-hmm. You might think of cutting this. You might think of talking more about that, you know. So I've seen a couple of lectures. As far as mentorship, I have mentored a bunch of people. There are people that I won't say I've mentored, but I have worked with over the years that I've either designed material for, helped write material, helped create material. People who have been competitors who come to me and say, hey, look at the act. Tell me what you think. Can you give me some help? And I've always done that. And I love doing it. It's great fun for me in exercising my brain, working on material that I wouldn't do myself. But, you know, if somebody else can do it, great. And surprisingly, and I thought about this, I've worked with a number of women and girls over the years. And I don't know specifically why that happened, why they kind of gravitated toward me, but it was really good experiences, I think, for both of us. And one person in particular, a young woman who I worked with pretty intensively for months and months on her competition act, and she did well in competition. And others that I've worked with 3-4 times, they were great experiences for me because, you know, it was a very different style. It's not stuff that I would do. And the one thing I always hated, people, you know, would always say, you teach, can you teach me? And I was like, for a while, when I was younger, I did. I stopped because I was really kind of getting sick of seeing clones of me. They were just emulating me far too much, and I really wanted to step away from it. And that was a growth process for me too. I had to figure out how to teach people without making them clones.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But working with females, I'm not going to see a clone of me. I better not. That would look really bad. But that was a challenge for me, and that kind of helped me step out of the me and enable myself to enable them to be the better them.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to mention about just sort of your mentorship and coaching experience?
No, I mean, I'm there. There's guys and girls at conventions. You know, the people say, well, that's Mark D'Souza, and he used to be, you know. I did a couple of competitions. So for those who don't know, I'm twice stage winner of SAM, close-up winner, SAM, IBM. So, yeah, so, you know, I've done both and have won both. And they'll say, oh, you should talk to him, and, you know. And I'm always happy to talk to people wherever I see them. You know, if I see the actor, you know, if you ask for the feedback, I'm going to give it to you. If you ask for it, I'm going to begin by saying, oh, I really enjoyed the performance, and I particularly liked X or Y. Would you like to talk about it more? Would you like me to give you some more detailed feedback? Mm. And if they say yes, I'll throw something out there and I'll try to gauge the reaction. And when it's appropriate, I will say, I'd really like to talk to you a lot more about this. Do you want to? You know, I don't want to specifically say, I'm going to rip you apart, but I'm going to rip you apart so I can help you put it back together better. That's a hard thing to say, particularly to someone who's, you know, 15 years old. They don't, they, you know, they're a little fragile. But I try to be nice about it, but I'm not going to sugarcoat.
Look good.
I'm not going to sugarcoat. There's what's the point? I mean, there's people here who I saw perform, and like they're walking next to me, and I just, and they're people who I've met before and I've talked with, and I'm just not going to have the conversation.
Yeah.
Because I know that conversation is not going to go well.
Sure.
Because I can't lie. I'm not going to go, great job. I'm not going to say, I really enjoy that. I'll say things, you know, like, never seen you better.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Such a great one. Yeah. Do you ever find people ask you for feedback, but they're just looking for praise?
Absolutely. That's really what I'm talking about here. Yeah. I try to gauge, are you looking for stroking or are you looking for actual feedback? And that's why I'll say, you know, oh, I enjoyed XYZ. Do you want, you know, more detailed feedback?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Yeah. So we end all of our interviews with a fun lightning round.
Beep, 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 beep.
You can, that is the new sound effect for the lightning round. We're keeping it in. So basically, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions.
Okay.
There are about 6 questions. You can answer them as short as one word or as long as Max Maven.
Or somewhere in between.
Ideally, like anywhere in between is fine.
Okay.
You get it.
Okay.
Max, love you.
Yay.
All right, lightning round.
Okay.
What's your most memorable lecture that you've had in your creepy basement?
Ow. Okay. Joni Spina.
You've said the right thing.
Oh, my God. Wow, what a wonderful experience that was. And I love Joni Spina. And she was just such a wonderful resource. And it was so good that she came out and did this. And what she did was she had people submit videos to be critiqued. And there were people that submitted videos that were really good people, you know, good performers. I mean, really pros. And she gave some phenomenal constructive criticism. There were some people that submitted things and all they wanted to do was argue with her. So it was just a really good experience all the way around because we saw what not to do when you're getting critiqued and we saw what to do when you're getting critiqued.
She's my favorite lecturer of all time. And I just saw her workshop at Magic Live, which was just an hour. So I couldn't even imagine. And with one act. So
yeah.
It's pretty, what a hero. Do you have an act right now that you would say everyone needs to go see this person? Or a show. A show?
A show?
Like, you could, like, I would have said at the time, like, go, everyone needs to see Carnival of Wonders.
I don't have to see Champions of Magic, do I? Is that what you're looking for?
Lord, please okay. don't say that. We are fine.
Okay.
An act or a show?
An act or a show.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Man, that's hard.
People to be like, is there a show, a specific show, a touring show that features five magicians?
I will tell you, I just saw David Copperfield show the other night.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen it in 7 years. And I knew some of the stuff that was coming. And there were just two OF moments that I knew it was coming. And I just looked up and went, you know, and said the word. And it just came out.
Yep.
It just came out.
Yep.
And then the dinosaur's like, oh, my. And I look at that and I find it incredibly moving and entertaining. And yet I look at it and go, why am I doing card tricks? You know, it's
because
I feel insignificant.
$2.95.
Right.
That's
right.
Why we're doing
right.
card tricks.
And you come to the realization that you're bringing something else to it and a different experience for people. So, but yeah, I enjoy David's show a lot. There's a lot of individual performers that I love. We just saw Shin Lim and Colin Cloud the other night, and that was a very enjoyable show. Shin's Shin. I mean, he does, that stuff is just remarkable. But Colin, I think, is the revelation to everybody. You know, they walk in because Shin Lim won AGT. Mm-hmm. But they're walking out going, boy, that Colin Cloud was really good.
Yeah, right. Can you shout out a woman in the magic community you think is doing a good thing? And you're not allowed to say Chris.
Ah, golly. You're rough.
I know. That's two out of the three that exist. So,
you know, there's a woman who happens to be here at the convention who I've known for a number of years, and I find her work to be relevant. And it's not that it is furthering the cause of women in magic, but her existence and performances do. Mm. And that's Alexandra Duvivier.
Ah, great. Yeah.
Yeah.
She
was just on. And yeah. I think she's marvelous. And though you don't want me to say it, I think this podcast is doing a lot for women in magic.
Right.
So, and both you and Carissa as performers, I think, do a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Broke the rules, but I'll take it.
I did. That's an after. I gave you one.
That's true.
I gave you one.
Is Divya here? I haven't.
She's here.
Yet.
Yeah.
I should find her.
Actually, she left today. She left today.
Missed her. I should thank her for being on the podcast that I wasn't a part of.
which is a great podcast. Yeah.
She's amazing.
I have not met Rachel Wax. I look forward to meeting her.
Really great.
Yeah,
she's awesome. All right. Who won the SAM convention in 1992? Are you laughing because you know? Or are you laughing?
No, Lizzie, because it's not. 1992. I don't remember where it was in 1992. I don't even remember where it was in 1992. Where was it?
I don't know. I just wrote it down.
Oh,
it might not even happen that year.
Oh, okay.
I originally wrote down FISM in 1987 and then went, I don't know if that's. That might be too intense.
FISM 1987, I think, would have been...
Oh, my God.
I think would have been Franklin from Germany.
And it's right, and I'm not even going to...
No, I don't know. I think it was. I think it was, though. Do you know the answer?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. No.
You win.
I thought you were going to throw one at me with, like, you know... You expect me to go, I don't remember that. It was you.
That would have been good. No, I just wrote it down while you were talking. I was like, fun one. Do you have a go-to effect?
Close or prestige?
One of each.
A go-to effect for my regular performances is Eggbag.
Eggbag.
And I was lucky enough to have Johnny Thompson teach me his routine for the egg bag 40 years ago. Mm. And he gave me permission to do it exactly the way he does it. He said, just change some of the lines. And I did it for about a year and felt I wasn't getting out of it what I should be. So I put it away for a year. And then I brought it back out and started thinking about what I needed to do with it so that I could perform it. And it took me a couple of months, and I started breaking in. And the routine is, I mean, it's stuff that Johnny taught me, but it's different. It's shorter. It's a little more direct than Johnny's routine. And it's my go-to worker. It really is. And my evil twin, Eric DeCamps, you know, said to me,
"Is your evil twin?"
I know. You don't know. You don't know all the stuff we've gone through over the years. The people that have full conversations with me thinking it's him and him thinking it's me.
It's like Jade and Juliana Chen and Julie Yang.
Aren't they the same?
Or me and all the other women.
I thought they were the same.
They might be. I think they're
I thought Jade and Juliana were the same. No.
Oh, have you ever seen them in the same room?
No. Because they only book one woman at any convention.
Right. I'm waiting for the day that somebody comes up to me and calls me Juliana Chen.
That would be good. No, but Eric said, you really should try doing it in close-up. I went, boy, I didn't even think about that. You know what I mean? It was always a stand-up trick, and it's a great, great, strong close-up trick. So I do it in close-up as well, but it's mostly for stand-up work. Close-up work, boy, go-to is different than, you know, favorite.
What's your favorite?
There's a routine I created 1979, called Alice Through the Window Pane. That's the story of Alice through the looking glass with a deck of cards. And that's still like my favorite things I've created. Right. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, last question. Who is Fred Capps?
Don't know. What should I know that? Okay, how many hours do we have here? Fred Capps, born Abraham Adrianus Peter Bongers. Fred Capps, the short version, was a Dutch magician who was the only magician to have won the Grand Prix de Magie, the highest award in magical competition, an unprecedented three times. He was, to me, the finest magician I ever saw. He is also the consummate professional, because this guy was equally at home doing stage, a silent act, a music-based act, doing a patter act, comedy patter act, were doing some of the most incredible close-up you ever saw. In addition, he'd also done children's magic, illusions, mentalism, you name it, the guy had done it. And done it all perfectly. And I had the good fortune to see him work a few times and meet him and talk with him, see him lecture. I've got tons of hours of video and a bunch of his personal props. And he's the guy, when I saw him when I was 10 years old on the Ed Sullivan Show, he was the act that followed the Beatles. And I looked at that and I went, that's different than anything I know about magic. And that kind of started me on it. So, yeah.
That's great. Thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me. This was a pleasure. Hi, Carissa.
Shazam is sponsored in part by the Society of American Magicians. Thank you, SAM. Go join a club.